Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:32 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is October 21st. Well, the yield curve spread popped on the upside in here today. We've had a pretty meaningful day right across the bond markets and the currency markets, and indeed cryptocurrencies have also done rather well. We've also had some impressive results for the third quarter for both Tesla and Align Technologies. So those are both previously had been darlings of the speculative investor or trader. So that does suggest that there's going to be some additional speculative flow coming through in the market. But of course, there are the additional questions about where is the next round of stimulus likely to come from. And this yield curve spread is a big answer or a potential answer to that question, because it's going to be very difficult for any central bank to allow yields to back up. And when we look at this chart, it has pulled back from the 70 basis point level on two previous occasions in March and June, and those corresponded with significant moves by the Federal Reserve to increase supply. When we look at, for example, the Federal Reserve's schedule of purchases for treasuries and mortgage bonds, they certainly do claim to be making the purchases they said they would, and yet the size of the balance sheet has gone absolutely nowhere since May. So if they are making those purchases, they're not storing them on the balance sheet. Alternatively, they're sanitizing those purchases, and that might in fact be the case. It could potentially be one of the reasons why yields are in fact backing up. And when we look at, for example, the 30-year, it went to a new recovery high in here today, and it paired the advance for most of the day, only to close pretty close to the top of the range on the day. It looks like we're getting to a point where central banks are going to have to start putting their money where their mouth is. When we look back at what they have said they were going to do and what they in fact did, what a lot of the response to the lockdowns and the panic in March represented were promises. They basically went to the market and said, we've got all of this money available at our disposal. When it is required, it will be made available. And that promise alone was enough to quieten down sentiment, because everyone concluded that the Fed's got their back. When we look back at the episode with the repo market about a year ago, when repos backed up and when liquidity disappeared, the Federal Reserve made $450 billion available overnight. And that was enough to solve the problem, but more than that, it confirmed to investors that if there really were a liquidity problem, the Fed is there and is going to act without any muss or fuss. So they haven't in fact had to do nearly as much as they said they were going to do. But we are getting to a point now where investors are beginning to look around and think, well, we haven't had a big liquidity infusion in a while, and there's all of this uncertainty about the U.S. presidential election. The number of COVID cases is starting to rise, and it's not just the number of cases rising, but it's also that the number of hospitalizations are rising and deaths are rising. So it's there is some form of argument or fear that we may be on the cusp of a second wave. When we look at, for example, there was a really good article in the Financial Times today that contained this graphic, and it had a lot of discussion about the response, what happened, how many deaths there have been, where those deaths have been concentrated. For example, in France, more than half the deaths, or almost somewhere around half the deaths, have occurred in care facilities. And when we look at the rolling number of deaths, and remembering that this is a logarithmic scale chart here, then we can see that certainly the number of deaths has been trending higher over the course of the last 3 weeks. It is nowhere near the steepness of the curve that we saw in March. And with the lockdowns and the the tightening up of regulation that is currently taking place, it's quite likely that the kind of panicky environment that prevailed in March and April will be avoided. But one thing we have seen is that the European markets have been pulling back. And when we look at the response today, the majority of markets in Europe were down in excess of 1%, some down more than that. So when, for example, we look at the Italian index, the banking sector in Italy is obviously under stress, but the more important point is that the wider economy, with a significant focus on exports, is obviously going to be levered to the global recovery. And the index having collapsed from around 26,000 to 14,000 in March, recouped approximately half the decline, and this is the logical area where we can anticipate some ranging. We're getting the ranging, but the big question then is, where is the higher reaction low likely to take place? This is almost an inverse chart of the number of new cases and deaths that are arising in Europe. When we then think about the wider European market, like the Euro Stoxx index, it's almost identical, except that the index is above the trend mean rather than below it. The UK, in this regard, is in a very similar boat to Europe, and the FTSE 250 is still right now in the region of the trend mean. The currency markets have concluded that what is going on in terms of the relationship between Europe and the EU and the negotiations is really not much more than an uptick in brinksmanship with a lot of face-saving measures that are going on right now. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, it has rebounded in pretty emphatic fashion back above the 110 area in here today. So it's just about holding the sequence of higher reaction lows and firming again around the 110 area versus the euro, suggesting that investors are beginning to price in the potential that the UK will more than likely retain access to the European markets, and that the worst case scenario of an abrupt Brexit, from a market's perspective at least, will be avoided. And I think that that is more than likely going to be the case. Whether it is going to satisfy a significant proportion of the UK electorate remains to be seen, and whether the Johnson administration will survive that kind of eventuality is another big question, but it does remain the most likely scenario. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the stock market and the US election, well, there's going to be another debate tomorrow, and it's almost inevitable that there's going to be an accusation by the Trump administration or by President Trump that Joe Biden's son is a pedophile. Now, this is just an incredible deterioration in the political discourse. The fact that these kinds of accusations are going to be made in public on air is a really quite profound deterioration in just the public sphere. It represents a real deterioration in what could be a very acrimonious post-election scenario. There is obviously the potential that one or the other party is going to win a clean sweep, or that we could have an enormous upset, or that the polls are in fact correct. One thing, though, we know is that the stock market has been somewhat weaker. Now, we've had some substantial positive earnings coming through in here today. When, for example, we look at Thermo Fisher, it's one of those companies that generally comes through crises in robust form. They've really had a spectacular run of positive returns. It's really quite overextended in the short term, but when we think about the earnings, they've come in well ahead of expectations. It's exactly the same for Tesla in here as well. Then when we look at, for example, Align, the one thing that Align does better than anybody is make the process of wearing braces for tweens more comfortable. Quite whether they actually work or not, it seems to be beside the point. Certainly my dentist advised against having them, but then again, I think we weren't a typical family either. But the reality here is that the share has clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs from the peak back in 2018. It's been consolidating. It's likely to be in positive territory tomorrow. The NASDAQ 100 was also was led higher in here today by some of the bigger companies. Facebook, for example, was up in really quite robust territory. Then when we look at the social media sector generally, Snap has also done rather well, and this I think is really quite emphatic that it has now been able to push back above its IPO level. And considering that back in 2019 and even earlier this year, it was written off as a social media venue, this is really quite a vindication of their business strategy. But what it also helps to highlight is that it's not simply that we have Facebook as a social media company, but that other social media companies are also doing rather well. And Twitter has now broken upwards to new recovery highs, and it's also now coming back up to exceed its IPO level. And generally, that is considered to be a significant Rubicon from the perspective of investors, that a company can regain its IPO level, and particularly following what would have looked like a catastrophic decline immediately afterwards. It generally suggests that the period of consolidation has in fact ended. Well, there is of course the potential that some of the social media companies that are smaller than Facebook may benefit from potential future antitrust suits against it. But then there's also the fact that Google has rallied rather impressively following the announcement of its antitrust or the suit being leveled against it by the Department of Justice. Well, it also helps to highlight that it's a very narrow suit and that it's unlikely to result in the breakup of the company. So there is certainly a threat of antitrust, but so far it's relatively modest in scale, and investors are perhaps concluding that it's more electioneering than anything else, because everything that happens in Washington over the course of the next few weeks is going to be considered part of the electoral campaign of both parties. That also, of course, leads to the question, is it in anyone's particular electoral interest to, in fact, permission a fiscal stimulus just 2 or 3 weeks before the election? There are a number of Republican senators feel that they would probably be best served trying to hew to the fiscal conservative base. And obviously, if they sign up to nearly $1.9 trillion worth of additional stimulus, then it's going to be difficult to claim that. There are obviously going to be, there's likely to be a lot of back and forth. Then, of course, the stock market and the currency markets are betting that the dollar is going to continue to decline here, and it is right back down on its lows. And while a little oversold in the short term, there is potential for some steadying. The renminbi, on the other hand, is really very overextended on the upside. It's been storming higher over the course of this month, and it has clearly broken through every single potential area of resistance that has been put in over the course of the last 2 years. So a clear dynamic against the renminbi would suggest a peak of near-term significance, but there is the simple fact that everyone expects there to be additional significant stimulus sooner or later from the USA, that the supply of dollars is going to continue to grind higher and potentially accelerate higher, whereas the bond market is being controlled in no uncertain terms by the Federal Reserve. You can still pick up over 3% in Chinese bonds in an appreciating currency. So that is contributing to additional interest in renminbi-denominated assets, quite apart from any other argument, whether one is concerned about authoritarianism or human rights. That is, in many respects, secondary to the yield that's available from an international perspective's investor's perspective, and the CSI 300 was well off its lows in here today as well. With the dollar continuing to trend lower, it was there was a really quite dynamic move higher by the yen in here today, and it is now challenging the Bank of Japan's determination that they're going to arrest its advance around the 104 level. There have been a number of instances over the course of the last few years where the yen has challenged that 104 level and it's been knocked back. So if the Bank of Japan is going to act, then it's going to happen pretty soon. And every time they have knocked back the yen, it's been positive for the Nikkei. And the Nikkei is now right below the 24,000 level, and it's looking quite steady. And this has been at nearly a 3-year range in the context of a massive first step above the long-term base formation. So there's the clear potential here that we're going to see Japan breaking higher, and it could potentially see that the catalyst is a weaker yen, but that remains to be seen. The Australian dollar has also been rather weak over the last few days, but it was in positive territory today. The RBA is talking about lowering interest rates even further, quantitative easing, potentially negative interest rates. They're trying to talk the Australian dollar lower. But the reality is that industrial resources and commodities more generally are doing rather well. And the London Metals Index has broken out to new recovery highs. When we think about the aluminium price, which is obviously influenced both by supply and demand and also the price of energy, then it has quite clearly broken what was a very consistent downtrend from that spiky peak back in 2018. The copper price has also been resurgent, and it was up in additional positive territory in here as well today. When we then take a broader perspective and look at an equal weighted commodity index, well, it's now called the Refinitiv Equal Weight, but it used to be called the Continuous Commodity Index. It has just about started to break upwards to new recovery highs. We're not quite there just yet, but when we look at the continued strength in soft commodities, where you've got corn prices that are now well above the $4 level, the wheat price, which has had this rounding characteristic for years now, has quite clearly broken out to new 5-year highs as well. These are responding to increasing demand, but also to some drought conditions. Soybeans have clearly broken through the 1,000-cent level as well. There's the clear potential that we're seeing commodity prices responding to the potential that we're going to have more of an inflationary bias, that there is a massive supply of currency that is being provided by just about all central banks, and that this is likely to represent a sea change in the way that people are looking at value. Gold prices continue to firm around the $1,900 area, and it's been steadying around this level now for 6 weeks in a rather admirable fashion. Hasn't quite yet been able to clearly break the downward bias. We did have a higher high just in the middle of October, and then it just pulled straight back, but it's coming back up towards that level again today. If we got follow through on the upside tomorrow, well, then we'd have greater confirmation that a low of more than very short-term significance has been put in for the gold price. We may be in a period of higher lateral ranging for a while before we see new highs on gold, but the reality today is that there's a lot of uncertainty. There's still this very clear intention by central banks to do whatever they can to reflate the global economy. They don't really have a choice. So that, I think, is the clear conclusion from an investor's perspective. And that's also part of the reason why Bitcoin has been breaking higher in here today. It's up now to the highest closing value we've seen since early 2018. And this is a substantial breakout from a well-defined first step above the range that was put in over the majority of this year. Then when we look at Ethereum, it has clear catch-up potential, and that also continues to look like a first step above the base. Ripple is one of the other lesser cryptocurrencies, and it is now firming from the region of the trend mean. Generally speaking, the Bitcoin price tends to have an explosive rally following a halving. Well, this year was a little different because it pulled back so sharply ahead of the halving and then rebounded in such an emphatic fashion, going from 4 to 10,000, and spent so much time ranging since that I think people forgot about that tendency. But there was a halving in May. It was only 5 months ago, and there is quite likely to be additional upside for the sector in here right now. Part of the other another reason for the uptick in here today was because PayPal said that they were going to start accepting Bitcoin. So I think that's a meaningful event as well. One thing that I thought was interesting is that Overstock had been one of the go-to cryptocurrency shares, but it has pulled back in here today. And the question I think that needs to be asked is whether it's going to still be a bastion of interest for investors, or whether the spectacular advance it put in during the pandemic has already realized a lot of the potential in the share. Obviously, a clear upward dynamic would confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.